Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. I'm your host of the radio show, Through the Smoke, Billy Goldfinger. We thank you for the incredible amount of listeners we have. We're breaking records, and we're pretty pleased with that. The stuff we're talking about on this show is the stuff we got fired about 10 years ago, so that's great. Freedom of speech is alive and well. This week, we've got a heavy, heavy show for you. We got Jeff Cool, firefighter Jeff Cool from Rescue Company Number 3 of FDNY. As many of you will know or may know or will know when I get done with you today, Jeff was part of the crews operating on January 23rd, 2005 on Black Sunday when one firefighter was from Brooklyn was killed in a separate fire, but two firefighters were killed and four very critically injured at a fire in the Bronx when they ended up having to bail out some windows. Killed at that fire were Lieutenant Kurt Myron and Firefighter John Ballou. Surviving that fire was Firefighter Joey DiBernardo, Eugene Stolowski, Brendan Cawley, and our guest this week, Jeff Cool. So we'll be back in just a few seconds and talk with Jeff Cool about his experience and the mission he is on so this does not have to happen to firefighters again. And also this week, from ManageYourAir.com, we've got Mike Galliano back to sort of give you a part two of the air management program and a couple of tips so you're ready to operate as a little bit smarter but still an aggressive interior firefighter. But first, we're going to take a look at some news, see what's up. On November 10th, Kansas City, I want to mention this specifically because there's a lot of folks out there that are saying RIT team and FAST teams, rapid intervention teams, are of limited or no value, and I want to again reiterate that's ridiculous. They are of value. No matter that, well, people will say, well, we just do it right on the fire ground and then we don't need RIT teams. Well, yeah, do it right, but in case it doesn't work out so well, you have a rapid intervention team. And in Kansas City, Missouri, a firefighter was trapped briefly when a porch collapsed at a house fire there on November 10th. They reported firefighters were on the porch and somewhere underneath it when it gave way around 0200 hours. Talking with Battalion Chief Joe Vitale from Kansas City, he says, in this instance, we had a trapped firefighter. We didn't know his condition. Our RIT teams were able to reach him within a minute, basically rescue him from the debris. He was trapped, but our teams got him out. He was not seriously hurt. But again, for those of you who are going to one-alarm fires, meaning your first due companies of a reported building fire, and you do not have a company assigned, whether it be mutual aid, automatic mutual aid, or whatever it is, to handle firefighter rapid intervention and rescue, you need to get refocused on the need to have that equipment on the road. Don't wait till you have a firefighter trapped and then go call for help. It's often too late. We want to do a little honor and remember the firefighters that were killed last week in California, those five firefighters who were overrun by that fire, who suffered horrible, horrible burning deaths. Don't kid yourselves, gang. These were as horrible and filled with terror as you can imagine, these firefighters burning to death. So we salute firefighter Jess McLean, Daniel Hoover Najera, Mark Lautzenheiser, and Pablo Cerda, firefighters who gave their lives trying to save property and doing searches for victims still left in that burned out area there. Three of those firefighters died when their apparatus was overtaken. 50 mile an hour winds and very, very low, like 6-7% humidity. A fourth firefighter died at the hospital, so three died right at the scene. They were DOA as the rig was overtaken. A fourth died at the hospital, and a fifth was taken off life support and died last week. The last time so many wildland firefighters were killed was July of 94 when 14 firefighters were killed near Glenwood Springs, Colorado. So again, our tip of the helmets and our heavy hearts go out to the families of those five and all the firefighters that were involved in that horrible fire. Also, another recent line of duty death was in Jefferson County, Indiana. Firefighters responded to a dwelling fire, very large dwelling fire. But initial reports are that they may have had a flashover. They did a head count when they got out of the building, and one firefighter was still inside. The body of missing firefighter Greg Cloud, 33 years old, of the Kent Volunteer Fire Department, was discovered by firefighters later in the upstairs portion of the home. Injured during the rescue attempt trying to save Greg's life was Robert Black, 39 years old, chief of the Madison Township Fire Department. Chief Black underwent surgery for a serious ankle injury. But again, our deep hearts are going out to the members of those fire departments and especially to the family of Greg Cloud. You know, another bad thing happened this week, and that's when Kurt Weldon didn't get reelected. We suffered a pretty heavy blow nationally by Kurt not getting back into office. The loss is tough due to the decision of longtime firefighter advocate Paul Sarbanes not seeking reelection, and also Sherry Burlett, and he retired from New York, and Mike DeWine in Ohio, he got ousted. So we've lost three major supporters of the fire service, but actually four major supporters of the fire service. But I think Kurt's on top of that list. You know, Kurt was the type of congressman, one we've not seen like this in the past. I was talking to my buddy Steve Austin, who's very active in the politics of the fire service. And as Steve said, Kurt didn't just represent firefighters in his district. He represented firefighters nationally. He was our fire chief in Congress, and for whatever reason, he did not get reelected. He was a supporter of career firefighters, union firefighters, volunteer. He didn't give a damn. As long as you were a firefighter, Kurt was the one who had our backs. He was our RIT team in Congress, along with his partners there, and we've lost them. So it's critical now that we do. We certainly do have a couple congressmen still in there, Steny Hoyer, senators and stuff, Joe Biden and others. But we lost four key players. So if you have an opportunity to talk to some of your elected officials, such as your congressmen, your senators, you need to make sure they're involved in the firefighter fire service caucus, and you need to communicate with them on a regular basis so they understand what our needs are. And we need to figure out nationally, if we can do anything nationally, and that's tough for us in our business, who's going to replace Kurt, who is going to be the spokesperson for us. None of the above have ever crawled down hallways like you and I have. Kurt was a firefighter, former fire chief, and he's no longer there. So thank you, Kurt, for what you did for us. We're going to miss you as our national spokesperson on the Hill. It's a big loss for us. We'll move on, but we sure do appreciate all the good you did. Here's one for you under the how stupid could you be subject. A firefighter was served dog food in his spaghetti by his fellow firefighters. This was a black firefighter, and I guess the firefighters working with him decided to put dog food in his spaghetti. He filed a complaint, and he will be paid more than $2.7 million to settle a lawsuit alleging racial harassment within the Los Angeles City Fire Department. Firefighter Tenny Pierce, 51 years old, alleged in his lawsuit that firefighter Jorge Arvalo mixed canned dog food into Pierce's dinner at their fire station 2 years ago, and that Captain John Tohill purchased the dog food, and that Captain Chris Burton knew about the prank and didn't warn Pierce. All three firefighters were present when Pierce ate the dog food. Pierce took a large bite at the time at which he noticed the other fires were laughing and making noises, the lawsuit says. He took a second bite and then demanded to know what was in his food, but nobody would tell him. Pierce left the kitchen with his co-workers laughing at him. A fire department investigation suggested the incident was intended to humble Pierce, the 6'5" firefighter, after his team won a station volleyball game. A lawyer for one of the defendants initially called the incident a good-natured prank, not in any way motivated by race. But a Santa Cruz professor from the University of California who was hired by Pierce's attorney to review department records of discrimination complaints, said the prank was clearly intended to humiliate and dehumanize Pierce. In addition to the three firefighters, a lawsuit named the city as a defendant because the fire captains allegedly allowed a hostile workplace to exist in violation of department policies forbidding harassment. The two captains were given 1 month off without pay as punishment. Arvallo was ordered off work for 3 days without pay, and as a part of the settlement, they were dismissed from the lawsuit, so they were not liable financially. The fire chief of the L.A. City Fire Department admitted the incident was intolerable and violates department guidelines of what's professional performance. That type of harassment or prank or whatever you call it is not consistent with what the public expects for the Los Angeles City Fire Department. The public has got to have confidence in us. But Councilman Dennis Zinn, a police officer for 38 years, or Zine, I'm not sure how his last name is pronounced, he was the lone vote against the settlement. He said he thought $2.7 million was outrageous for something that caused no serious harm and no permanent harm, no injuries, things like that. That's not to say this was not right, he said, not to justify what he did, but $2.7 million? I don't think it was a racial deal. I think it was a prank that turned bad, but it did go bad to the point that he's harmed for life. He's not harmed for life. That should cost taxpayers $2.7 million? That's ridiculous. In his lawsuit, Pierce said that for more than a year after October 04, he was subjected to verbal slurs, insults, and derogatory remarks, including taunting by firefighters, barking like dogs, and asking him how the dog food tasted in presence of his supervisors. In addition to the payout, the settlement provides for Pierce to remain on fully paid administrative leave until April when he reaches his 20-year service anniversary, and then he can retire with an annual pension amount of half his salary for life. You know, we're not sure that $2.7 million equals what he went through, but that's how the systems work today and how the courts work today. I guess the lesson here is that we got to treat people the way we want to be treated, and there's always that fine line between practical jokes and hurting somebody's feelings. I'm not sure I'd want to eat dog food. Hell, maybe I have eaten dog food and didn't know it. Food usually tastes pretty good to me, and maybe somebody practiced a practical joke on me. I know I've had others play to me in the job, and I know I've played jokes on others for many, many years of my years of service. But it's a different day these days, and unfortunately, while I would never, and none of us would ever advocate pain, being hurtful, injuring, anything racially, religiously, or any type of motivation, we do have a good time in the firehouse. But supervisors, you need to understand it's a different world today. And hostile work environment is a wide, wide, wide umbrella. So basically, if it's in your rules, you have a responsibility to enforce it. Don't let this kind of stuff bring down the morale of your organization. Don't let it hurt a firefighter like Tenny Pierce. And don't let it cost your taxpayers $2.7 million. It's a little bit crazy, if you ask me. Another lawsuit issue I want to share with you. The Amputee Firefighters Association, which is a national organization, their board of directors has voted to file a $100 million lawsuit against the Heartland Deerfield Fire Authority in Michigan. The association alleges the department failed to reply to former firefighter David Dunville's request to test for his old job. Dunville is an amputee, and they're filing complaints with the EEOC and the ADA, the Americans, or filing a complaint, EEOC complaint under the Americans with Disabilities Act. The fire chief of Heartland, Adam Carroll, denied the allegations, says he did respond to Dunville's request, but he's heard nothing back until the lawsuit. The fire chief is quoted as saying, "If this is the way Mr. Dunville is going to conduct himself in business, I'm not sure we'll have a place for him in our fire department." Well, the issue really falls under the fact that this firefighter was an on-call firefighter with the department in 1999 when he slipped on wet concrete at the fire station after they returned from a fire call. A ship shattered his left tibia. Dunville spent 3 days in the hospital, was eventually released, only to learn months later that the bones in his leg were not healing. After numerous surgeries that included inserting rods in his legs and transplanting stomach muscle into his ankle area, Dunville decided to have his leg amputated to give him as much mobility as possible. So physicians amputated his left leg about 6 inches below the knee, and today he uses a prosthetic leg, including one specifically designed for firefighters because it can carry the additional weight of our gear. So it's a difficult situation. This firefighter wants to get back on the job. He wants to undergo the training again. He wants to go through classroom, hands-on, wants to complete the probationary period, and what have you. I guess the lesson learned here is it's not necessarily up to the chief or any of us to make these decisions. We have legal folks in the organizations. Let them check it out. And honestly, if the firefighter can perform the job, I know of firefighters who are amputees who are doing a good job on career and volunteer fire departments. The goal is to try and stay out of court as much as possible. Here's one more that just came out. Some of you may be familiar with Helping Our Own, which is a group that supports fire departments who don't have the things that we need. Mark Warnick, the man who created Helping Our Own, he basically was their director, an organization known for assisting struggling fire departments. They've been booted out by a group brought in to lend a hand with fundraising, some sort of inside coup going on there. That's sad. Mark Warnick was named the 2004 Still National Forestry Heroism Award recipient for the good work he's done in supporting firefighters. We'll have a link on the website to an article related to this, and it's on firehouse.com if you look at it. And again, it's a real shame because this was a scam, I guess, that ended up putting them out of business. Hell, it was a nonprofit group, and all they did is help firefighters. But the person they got involved in this, I guess, has a history of also ripping off other organizations. This gentleman who got involved trying to help, a guy named Wilkinson, ended up trying to help out with the organization and ended up screwing over Helping Our Own group. H.R. Wilkinson is his name. So watch out for that name and check out the article on firehouse.com for more information. Beware, and our hats off to Mark Warnick for the good work he did over the years in helping firefighters and fire departments that had nothing. I'm sure Mark's going to end up back on his feet again supporting fire departments and firefighters who need stuff. And here's one other issue I want to talk to you about. I don't think a month goes by where you and I don't read an article where a firefighter was involved in arson. Last week in West Branch, Michigan, a former volunteer firefighter pleaded guilty to a series of arsons, including torching a home owned by the local fire chief. Rita Naveau pleaded guilty, this was a female, in court to 3 felony counts of arson. She formerly served with the Richland-Logan Township Fire Department, where her mom is the fire chief. Police have said Naveau suited up to help fight many of the blazes that she later confessed to setting the fires in the area dated back to 03 and include 2 at her mother's home and burning of a camping trailer owned by her brother. A tearful firefighter told the court she was motivated to set the fires by the abuse she suffered as a child. You know, child abuse is a tough issue, but boy, we hear more and more being blamed for a lot of stupid acts by a lot of stupid people. Her attorney says she didn't mean to hurt anyone. Well, what about those firefighters that had to go fight those fires? She faces a maximum of 10 years in prison. And also, in upstate New York, Horicon, New York, a volunteer firefighter from the Albany area, has been charged with setting fire to a general store where his 2 teenage cousins were staying for the summer. Sounds like a lot of family issues here. Why don't we try and keep the fire departments out of it? The county sheriff says 27-year-old Brian Hodges of Cohoes, New York, was infatuated with the girls and didn't want them staying with their aunt in the town of Horicon. Hodges is accused of setting fire to the Brant Lake General Store, a century-old landmark in a town 90 miles north of Albany, New York. The store was completely destroyed by fire. The property was owned by Valerie Steinman, who lived above the store with her family. She said Hodges was apparently obsessed with her 16-year-old niece. Steinman said the teen's father had sent his daughters to spend the summer with Steinman to keep Hodges away from the 16-year-old. Hodges allegedly set the fire to force the cousins to move them back to the Albany area. He's been charged with felony counts of arson and reckless endangerment. You know, it's not the first time we've heard about firefighters being charged with arson. All those seem to have, those two stories have a little bit more to it based upon the issues they have with relatives, boyfriends, girlfriends, moms, dads, whatever. I'm afraid that many of you listening and many other firefighters are aware of other firefighters being involved in arson. A story just came out again this morning in Maryland about another firefighter being charged. If you have a hint about it, maybe you need to let somebody know. Keep in mind that lighting fires is a crime, but it also leads to the death of firefighters. You've got to be absolutely stupid if you suspect somebody in your organization is being an arsonist and you don't take some sort of action. Don't worry about falsely accusing them. Notify the right folks and maybe they can look into it. We have enough problems in our business. The last thing we need is more of these clowns who consider themselves firefighters lighting fires that could take our lives as well. And a final thought before we get onto our interviews. Cancer and firefighters. You know, we risk our lives and you risk your life every day to save others. But a new study finds that we may be risking more than we think. Researchers report firefighters are at a greater risk for several types of cancers compared to workers in other fields. Furthermore, the protective equipment firefighters currently use is not doing a good enough job of protecting them from harmful chemicals. Firefighters are exposed to many cancer-causing compounds, including benzene, diesel engine exhaust, chloroform, soot, styrene, and formaldehyde. These substances can be inhaled or absorbed through the skin. Researchers say this latest study is the largest study investigating cancer and firefighters to date, and the authors conclude the evidence shows a direct correlation between exposure and increased cancer risk. Researchers from the University of Cincinnati compiled data on 110,000 firefighters from 32 different studies. Investigators report half of the studied cancers were associated with varied levels of an increased risk. Specifically, firefighters, you are twice as likely to develop testicular cancer and have higher rates of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, prostate cancer, and multiple melanoma when compared to non-firefighters. One of the folks involved in the study stated, "Firefighters work an inherently dangerous occupation on a daily basis," said Dr. LeMasters, Dr. Grace LeMasters, involved in the program. As public servants, they need and deserve additional protective measures that will ensure they aren't an increased cancer risk. Wow, something else to make us nervous about being firefighters, like there's not enough. Well, those are the headlines. We're going to be back. I've got for you coming up Jeff Kuhl from FDNY and Mike Galliano talking about air management. Jeff, of course, is going to talk about his horrible experience of having to bail out of that building in the Bronx. You're listening to radio at firehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We'll be right back.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We're back. This is Through the Smoke on radio at firehouse.com. I'm Billy Goldfeder, your host. We've got a very special guest up next. We're going to be speaking now with Jeff Kuhl. Jeff's a member of the FDNY Rescue Company number 3. And most of you may know the name, Jeff. If you don't, you will when you're done with this show. Jeff was involved in Black Sunday, that infamous day in New York City where one Brooklyn firefighter was killed and two Bronx firefighters were killed. A major snowstorm swept through New York on January 23rd that day, Black Sunday, when firefighters in the Bronx were called to an apartment fire on East 178th Street about 8 o'clock in the morning. First arriving companies encountered fire on the third floor of a four-story multiple dwelling. As units went about their assignments, crews continued to search for extension. Firefighters reported a loss in water pressure as they searched the fire floor, which had undergone several renovations. Conditions very suddenly changed rapidly, and fast-moving fire forced several firefighters to windows because they had no other options. Without any other options for them to consider, six firefighters were forced to jump to the ground. Firefighter Joey DiBernardo, Eugene Stolowski, Brendan Cawley, and Jeff Kuhl all suffered life-changing injuries, while Lieutenant Kurt Myron and Firefighter John Ballou were killed tragically in the line of duty. Jeff Kuhl, who's our guest today, carried a non-regulation rope he had bought at a fire trade show, which he and Joey DiBernardo used to cut a critical 10 feet off their fall. This whole thing could have been avoided, according to Firefighter Kuhl. The rope should have been there. We should have been issued ropes. Jeff said his injuries prevent him now from being a full-time firefighter again. So instead, Jeff is pushing to advocate nationally for other fire departments, all fire departments, to provide firefighters with safety ropes. FDNY asked me to endorse the rope, said Jeff, but he still doesn't feel it's the right rope. Eileen Ballou said the issue was a difficult one for her because her husband might have survived had he had a rope. But because he didn't, she now fears his memory may be tied to that issue. Well, Jeff, welcome to Through the Smoke. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Good morning, Chief.
All right, Jeff, well, tell us about that day. You reported to the firehouse. Were you on the first half of your tour or the second half? Or tell us about that morning.
We were coming into the second half of our tour. I was working at 24. I came in on the night of the 22nd. Actually came in a little early on the 22nd because the snow already started coming down, and I live about 35 miles north of New York City. And the snow was coming down at a rapid pace. We had a pretty quiet night tour, and we had an early morning run. So when this run came in on East 178th Street, we were up in the kitchen. We were having coffee. We heard the initial run came in. We heard a 1075 being transmitted for work and fire. And out the door, Rescue 3 went. There was approximately 12 inches of snow on the ground at the time. The wind was probably blowing in excess of 45 miles an hour, and the temperature was in the teens.
Boy, nasty conditions.
Yeah, it wasn't great conditions. We were facing a nor'easter. Rescue 3 reported into the scene to the battalion. My captain reported in to find out orders for us. I was assigned the irons that day, the forceful entry, along with Joey DiBernardo, which was assigned to hook. We were a team. And
just briefly explain to our readers, I'm not familiar with FDNY vernacular, what the role of the hook and what the role of the irons firefighters are.
Basically, the interior firefighters, we're the ones that will be in there searching for fire and life. You know, doing any forceful entry need be. We're a team. We operate together. We would be opening up, assisting any truck companies that were in there.
Okay.
And I was operating a thermal imaging camera that day also, being okay. The forceful entry position.
Okay.
The fire was on the third floor. Rescue 3 was ordered to report to the top floor. We popped several doors on the top floor, had a moderate smoke condition up there. We had our face pieces on, but it wasn't really banked down. We couldn't find a fire. We were searching around. I was operating a thermal imaging camera under the direction of my captain, and it took us a while before I actually located the fire. In the time that I located the fire, the conditions started to deteriorate rapidly. The fire was located in a kitchen area in a wall, which I opened up. My captain was ordering a line up there because it's sometime in the fire, and I don't recall a lot of this because of my head injuries that I sustained in the fall.
Sure.
He asked for a line, and I remember him definitively asking for a line. In the time that he asked for a line, the conditions were deteriorating rapidly. I stepped out into the hallway, which is probably 10 feet away from the captain, if that, pointed my thermal imaging camera down the hallway, and noticed a truck company operating beyond the fire and beyond the egress point where we came into the apartment.
That was 27 truck?
That's correct. That was 27 okay. truck.
And it should be noted for the listeners of the show that, and although we're not going to get into it too much in this discussion, but water supply was a major factor in this fire. So as you're listening to Jeff talk, his captain calling for a line was a major issue trying to get water to this fire, correct, Jeff?
That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
Big issue in this fire. And then, go ahead.
And so I advanced down the hallway to get this truck company, which I didn't know was 27 at the time. And I faced a firefighter face-to-face. I can't see him in the smoke, but I'm telling him, you know, we got to get out of here. The fire's behind us. You guys got to follow me. The guy goes, we're trapped. I'm going, we're trapped? No, come this way. In a matter of 5 seconds, the area that I just came in was fire floor to ceiling. There was absolutely nowhere to go. We scurried around the room and scurried around the room looking for a way out. There was fire from every corner we turned in, there was fire. The only way to go was to the two windows that were in the apartment that we were in, or the bedroom that we were in. 27 truck ended up, the four members of 27 ended up in one window. I ended up in another window on top of an air conditioning unit, taking an extreme beating.
Like a window mounted air conditioning unit.
Yes, a window mounted air conditioning. Yes, it was.
And what are you thinking at this point, Jeff? I mean, there's probably obvious stuff you're thinking, but tell us, because most of us have never been in the situation you were.
I was trying to stay pretty calm, and I think everybody that was there that day stayed as calm as can be. And if you hear the radio transmissions,
right.
They sound loud and everything, but I think everybody was pretty calm. You know, we were trying to keep your cool about you, and Maydays were transmitted, and not everything was picked up on the tape. You know, it was a pilot program at the time. That was the first time that the handy-talkie transmissions were recorded at the fire scene. That was a pilot program in FDNY.
That's off the recorder in the battalion's vehicle?
That is correct.
Okay. And, yeah, I listened to the tapes, and I have to agree with you. The members trapped were as professional as I've ever heard of members being trapped. And I think really the first panic screaming was the firefighter on the ground who witnessed you guys coming down.
Yeah, I would say without a doubt, and I wouldn't want to have been that guy. I've never met him. To be there standing and watch guy after guy hit the ground, you know? I mean, it's there in my mind, but I'm blocking it out, and I don't want to see it. I just remember looking at Joey DiBernardo, which was to my left. He was trapped in another bedroom, and I kept looking at Joey and saying, Joe, you know, we got to get out of here. And he's like, Jeff, we got to get out of here, you know? And I said, I got a rope in my pocket, Joe, but I have nowhere to tie off to. And Joey said, throw me the rope and I'll anchor you.
So now the rope was, did you have any D-hooks on them or anything on either end of them or carabiners?
Yeah, we had, it was an RIT rope. It was a RIT rope. It was a 50-foot Kevlar woven rope. It had an ascender on it. It had three beaners on it.
Okay.
I had a harness on, a Gemtor harness. I'm just going to tell you, when you get in one of these situations, I've done 100 and some odd different slides. Joey said he's done 500 and some different slides working with John Salka and out there doing firefighter safety and survival.
Right.
And you know what? Two rescue firefighters, and we couldn't overcome what we were faced with that day. You know, we both ended up doing a body belay, and ultimately we both ended up on the ground. I'm still not 100% sure if the rope broke or not. I guess one day we'll find this out when we end up in court, but that's really not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here to tell you what led up to us. Yeah, we all hit the ground, and maybe that stayed 10 feet off of our fall. Joey ended up falling a little bit farther than me. He fell into a below-grade entrance into the basement, and I fell on the top of the steps. So he got me probably by 8 or 10 feet. You know, he fell additionally. But what I'm here to talk...
Yeah, what we wanted to talk about, Jeff, is actually you're on a man on a mission now.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I'm a man on a mission. And, we had ropes. I came on the FDNY in 1992, and we were issued personal harnesses and personal ropes. And somewhere around 1996, the New York City Fire Department knew that the ropes and the harnesses were going to hit the life expectancy of 10 years. And they decided they didn't have the money, or they didn't want to spend the money to provide the firefighters an egress system.
What is the money, Jeff?
It wasn't used enough. At the time, I'm looking at documents that I've pulled up, and it was something like $900,000. That's what it was at the time.
So $1 million to equip everybody.
Yeah, that's what it was at the time. And now we're talking, we're talking about two firefighters' deaths, four firefighters changed forever, and the ropes and harnesses are back. I pleaded with Commissioner Scapetta the day I left St. Barnabas Hospital to get the ropes and harnesses back, and he promised me that they would get back, and I applaud him for getting a system in place. But, the New York City Fire Department is always a reactive fire department. We're not a proactive fire department. And now they have them, but they're reactive, and, we have two deaths. And now I'm out on a mission to try to make the rest of the fire service aware of the PSS, the personal safety system. And there seems to be a lack of concern in the National Fire Service about the PSS. And it's going to happen again. You can mark my word. You can say Jeff Kuhl said this, and I'm not looking for it. I'm knocking on wood as we talk. I don't want to see another firefighter die because he has to decide he's going to jump out a window or be burned to death. And I don't want to see that happen.
A lot of firefighters thinking, well, I got, three-story building in my district. What's the big deal? Well, you know, jump 30 feet tomorrow if you have a chance and find out what it's like. And obviously I'm not recommending people do that, but you need it. Also, for firefighters in high-rise situations, you're going to think, well, what's a 50-foot rope going to do for me? It'll get you to the floor below the fire.
Yeah.
And it'll get you to another window. I mean, that's sort of what you're talking about, right, Jeff?
That's correct, Chief. And, you know, after reading this month's issue of Firehouse, and I was reading the Wilmington, Delaware,
right.
And we've talked about it, about the firefighter who was trapped in a 9-story project-type building on a 7th floor. And he had a, whatever reason, he decided he wasn't good in that atmosphere anymore. He jumped from the 7th floor window to an aerial ladder, which was about 5 feet away.
Right.
Yes,
sure.
And that guy, if he had a PSS, he could have lowered himself one floor or lowered himself safely to that aerial device and not hope by the grace of God that I don't hit the ground.
Right.
Now, I've made hundreds of phone calls to people in the fire service pleading to get this thing rolling. Let's either get the National the NFPA Protective Clothing Standard Committee to look into it and change the standards, or to get national legislation passed to say that we need to have these PSSs for every firefighter in the country. I'm not asking for a differentiation. I don't even know if I said that right. A difference between the paid firefighter.
Differentiation. That word.
The paid fire departments or the volunteer fire departments. There's a need for this anywhere we go in the country, and I can prove that. I mean, my background in the fire service. I've been a New York City fireman for 14 years. I've been an Air Force firefighter for 21 years. I've been around a volunteer organization for 20 years. A 10-foot fall will kill you. I can show you where you can use this everywhere in the country. And we need to find out where we can appropriate funds to get these PSSs out there, because they're going to be expensive. I mean, they can run anywhere from $350 to $600 a system. But, I mean, we send a firefighter in to save lives and property, and he wears approximately $6,000 in gear on his back. Why shouldn't we spend another $350 to $600 to provide him a fail-safe to get out if the need arises? And the analogy I use is, and I take this from a lieutenant on FDNY that gave me this, a good friend of mine, and he said that it's like a fighter pilot. You know, he sits on top of a multi-million-dollar aircraft, not wanting to blow out of there, but if he has to bail out of that aircraft, he has an ejection seat and he has a parachute. And safely he can get to the ground if he needs to. And we need to show the fire service that. We need to show our congressmen and our senators. Somehow we have to find the money to use for these firefighters. I mean, there was 33 documented cases before Black Sunday, January 23, 2005, in FDNY of the rope and harnesses being used. And everybody looks up to the New York City Fire Department, what they're doing and where they're making changes. Well, you know what? People should be looking at this right now. I just talked to a Baltimore City firefighter, had about 25, 30 years on a job, had no idea about this story. And if you're in the fire service today, you should be on top of everything that's going on.
Absolutely.
I mean, as far as training. And this guy was oblivious to it. And I'm not saying in a bad way about this guy, but he just didn't know what was going on. And that's like because it's on the back burner in the fire service. And we got to get it out there on the front. And we really need to get out there and show somehow to our congressmen or senators how to get this money, because it's going to cost millions and millions of dollars, but, you know, a firefighter's life is worth it.
Well, I think a couple of avenues, and you and I have talked, and I left a message for that chief that you and I spoke about before, and he's is going to get in contact with you and start the ball rolling. I'm also going to contact you, Jeff, with some direct numbers to some folks at the NFPA. So we want to look at the standards process. We want to look at funding, and that might be through the USFA, through the Fire Administration, or even perhaps we can get some of the other organizations like the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation or the IFC Safety, Health, and Survival Section, all of them together to focus on the need for this device. But yes, also, you know, a lot of you out there have got new congressmen and senators out there now, and they're going to be asking you for input on issues. Well, here's an issue. You know, you may want some other new stuff for your department. And let's say you're putting in maybe it's Fire Act grant time. You're getting ready for next year's round of grants. When you put in for your new air packs or your new bunker gear, why not write into that also the opportunity for the personal safety device that Jeff's talking about? Now, Jeff, let's talk technically for a minute. Let's say I'm going to equip my 60-man department with one for each member. What are the specs? What do I want in this device to make sure I'm getting what you're talking about?
All right. Well, I'm not going to endorse one rope per se.
Right. None at all.
But what I'm going to tell you, if you go out and buy a PSS, put a lot of thought into it. It's got to be an NFPA-approved rope, okay? It has to be a simple system. It needs to be pre-attached. Too many steps, you're going to have a negative result. You know, if it has two steps in it, that's probably the best. If it has six steps in it, it's going to take a lot longer to deploy that system, and that's out, you know. It has to have an ascender in it. Body belay is out. I'm going to tell you right now, body belay is absolutely out, and I've read a million forums. I've talked to a guy yesterday in my volunteer fire department. They couldn't afford to go out and buy a pre-attached system with an ascender and beaners and a whole thing, so they just went and bought ropes, and they're going to do a body belay. I'm saying, well, that is totally out, because I'm telling you right now, if your gloves are wet or if you're in a snowy, cold, icy atmosphere, you're going to end up on the ground. That's going to be negative results, and there's no doubt about that that's going to happen. I mean, we operate in that perfect atmosphere when we train, and I've done body belays with the New York City Fire Department prior to this happening, but they're totally out now. Body belay in the New York City Fire Department does not happen anymore.
Jeff, a brief description of body belay for listeners who may not be familiar.
A body belay would be when you take the rope and wrap it. One end would be out the window, and you take the rope and wrap it around you and under your armpits and grasp it in both hands and slide out the window. But you'd have to, like, load the rope. You'd have to anchor the rope on one end. But it's basically your ascending device is your hands. And if you lose grip on that rope, you're going right to the ground.
Okay.
With this PSS, when you do decide you're going to buy this PSS, you need to train. You got to know how to do this with your eyes closed, hands down, like tying your sneakers, because time is of the essence.
Well, you mentioned that when you and Joey were in the process of getting down, you threw the rope to him and he tied off and what have you. But yeah, I'm thinking when you're in that, I mean, you literally were within seconds of losing your life. Whether it be by the fire or having to bail out the window, unfortunately, the two brothers did lose their lives. So simplicity, and I look at that all the time. A lot of times manufacturers will call me up or many of the others that are involved in Firehouse and radio shows and regular shows. What do you think? And honestly, if I have to think about it, I don't want it. I mean, it really is that's how simple it needs to be. When you're within seconds of losing your life, you want to click, snap, and jump. I mean, that's really all you have time to do sometimes.
That's
so
it.
So I guess I'm emphasizing the KISS method, you know, keep it simple, stupid.
That's
for the manufacturers we got a lot of manufacturers listening to the show. So when you and your folks are out there inventing stuff for us, if it's not simple, forget it. Don't waste your time, because it's not going to be of any value to us. Go ahead, Jeff.
And this is, you know, another thing. I've already heard guys saying that, I don't want to carry it. You know, it's going to be too heavy. It's too cumbersome. You know what, I'll tell you right now that there's six firefighters, there's two that are not with us anymore. Their families definitely would wish that they had the PSS in their pocket that day or attached to their harness. You know, when you're there in that situation, believe me, everybody wants to know how it was in there. Well, I've seen the pictures of my turnout gear, and I know how that fire felt on my back. I mean, the fire was just lapping at my backside. I had burns all over my back, and you have no choice but to bail out. I mean, and that's what those guys did. I mean, Joey and I were lucky that we had a rope, and we got out of there. You know, we still ultimately ended up hitting the ground, but we shaved maybe 10 feet off, you know, sure, a guesstimate. But these other firefighters, they didn't have that. And, you know, and there's four of us that are absolute miracles that we're here today, because by all accounts, we should all be dead. There should be six guys dead, and I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad I'm here to, you know, to do what I can for the fire service. I mean, we joke around, Joey and I, we're broken firefighters now, you know, but I'm a man on a mission, and I'm gonna be out there pushing. You know, people might not want to listen to me, but every day I'm on the phone and I'm talking to somebody. Let's get these PSSs rolling, you know, across the country. And
Jeff,
I know.
Let me ask you a question. Have you designed? Is there a spec out there? Do you have a written spec?
I haven't seen a written spec on one, no. I know, like, there's a couple different systems, you know, guys have asked me to look at. And I tell you what, if the day did come that, you know, I was going to endorse one, I would make my own, you know, and I don't know if that day's ever going to come. But
well, let me ask you this. If you get a chance and you can put together a spec of what it should include, sort of what you just talked about, We'll market the heck out of it on this show for you and get it posted so members at least can start. I mean, if their department isn't going to buy it, well, let's say Fireman Jones wants to, or Firefighter Jones wants to go out and get his own. Here's what you need to make sure it has. So if you work on that, let me know, and we'll get that posted so at least that can get moving. And I think the manufacturers out there, and there's all kinds out there, might be interested in seeing what would be considered a generic spec for the PSS.
Yeah, that's a real good idea. And, you know, I'm going to applaud one company, is Petzl right now. You know, they're the ones that are doing the New York City system right now, and they will not sell a system until you're trained on it.
That's
awesome because, you know, when we spoke at Firehouse Expo, I said my biggest fear when we spoke to the class that day, I said, just don't run downstairs and buy that PSS. Put some thought into it, you know. I mean, I'm asking, you know, as a firefighter, as chiefs, put a lot of thought into before you go out and buy that system, you know. And people can reach me if they really have questions, you know. I mean, there's definitely a way to reach me. I don't want to put my email out there, but...
No. Well, you know, they can reach us through the show here, and Firehouse will get in touch with you directly for you.
And I would be glad to talk to any, you know, any department across the country, you know, to show them the need for this thing.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate your time. Any final word or comment before we move on?
Firefighters, you know, we every day, you know, we go in there saving lives and property, and I'm just going to plead one more time to please afford your firefighters the opportunity to bail out in a safe and efficient manner if the need arises. Spend the money now before we go to another line of duty death, because, you know, I've been to way too many in my short career, and I don't want to see it happen again.
Well, you know, we look forward to hearing you, Joey, Eugene, and Brendan speak out in San Diego in February. And you mentioned that you got to understand, from my perspective and many of the listeners, you are obviously still firefighters. You may not be going to fires as you once were, but you're certainly now continuing to make a difference in your unselfish efforts in helping us understand what happened, and also helping us understand that along with our boots, our bunker coat, our helmet, our light, we need a rope. And it's no longer should be considered an option. And as you said, 33 or 30-plus firefighters have used their ropes to get out in the past. So it's not like we don't know there's a need. You know, as the major snowstorm swept through New York back in January 23rd, these firefighters almost lost their lives, and of course two of them, Kurt Myron and John Ballou, did. We salute Joey, Eugene, Brendan, and Jeff, especially you, for coming on the show today, talking to firefighters about it. We're very lucky we get a couple hundred thousand listeners to this show, so people are listening, and it'll put a little bug in their ear. And if you do get a chance and come up with what you would consider a generic spec, just so firefighters or maybe firefighters' families listening to this show, Christmas is coming up. Instead of buying a little toy model or a new T-shirt, maybe you spend some money and get your loved one their own PSS, or at least maybe send the spec out as a part of your Christmas card. And also consider the fact that you can't get this tool without training. When your department gets a new piece of apparatus, the gang doesn't get on the rig and start driving around. You're not allowed to operate that rig until you're qualified and certified. And the same thing goes, as Jeff said today, with your personal safety system. You can't just get one, walk the floor, exhibit floor one of the shows, and pick it up, hook it to your coat, and think you're ready to go, because you're going to find yourself in a bad situation if you do. Jeff, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
If I could just
absolutely
add one thing. December 6th of this year, we're going to be doing, in the Rockland County Fire Training Center, we're going to do a Black Sunday seminar, and it's going to show you whether the need for the PSS is very important. I'm going to try to get some senators and congresspeople there, and let them hear firsthand how important it is. And when we're out in Firehouse World, if anybody has a senator or congressman out there on the West Coast, that you can get them there to hear this story firsthand and show them how important it is, we'd appreciate it. But we're going to be at the Rockland County Fire Training Center December 6th at 7:30, and it's going to benefit the Andy Fredericks Memorial Scholarship Fund. And Andy was a member of Squad 18 that made a supreme sacrifice on 9/11.
We will put a link to, I believe it's 44 Control. That's the link for the Rockland County Fire Training Center. If you folks are listening to the show, look at the bottom of the webpage here. I'll have a link on there for you. You can click and find out more about that seminar. Not only will you learn about the PSS systems, right, and You'll also be able to donate to a good cause, and that's the Andy Fredericks Memorial. I'm also honored in January. I was asked to speak in Elmsford, New York, on the 13th. Again, we're raising money for the Andy Fredericks Memorial. Jeff, thanks for your time today.
All right, Chief. All the best. Be safe.
Thank you, brother. Gang, we'll be back in just a few seconds with Mike Galliano for part two of Managing Your Air. You're listening to Radio at Firehouse.com. I'm Billy Goldfeder.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.